doe je dat voor stats, you know. But I don't see them because I didn't know then they could come in an invisible form. It's much less frightening for us at the beginning.
Hi, I'm Wendy. Thank you for listening. My guest, Sunbow True Brother, is an experiencer. Up close and personal, he has encountered Sasquatch. The Sasquatch Message to Humanity, Conversations with Elder Camus. One of the paragraphs in here, this is chapter 50. So in the end, what does it matter to you human people if my Sasquatch people really exist or not? Why can't your controlled religions and limited science acknowledge the reality of our very existence? Is it because our presence proves that your scientific knowledge and spiritual understanding are wrong? Could it be that the recognition of my people's existence could free you from the enslaving paradigm? Continuing the conversation with Sunbow True Brother, there's a connection between the Star Brothers and the Sasquatch with crystals. What's that about?
Crystals are a life form. It's been suggested by some scientists that it's not just, it has all the properties of a life form. It grows, it records energy, and it interacts with the environment on subtle level, but that are measurable. So crystals can be devices. They're the highest form of mineral life, we can say. Crystals have been used like in many ancient cultures for healing and for various properties, including for libraries. Because even today, NASA is using quartz crystal for the hard drive of their computer and the space shuttles, because it can store the largest quantity of information, quartz, and it also very durable, one of the most durable lasting matter. So if you want to put, for instance, the whole library of a civilization on a spaceship to send or to transfer somewhere, we would use crystals. That's what they do. There's also another thing that I'm just discovering as it goes, that they call pseudo crystals, and that's used on spaceships. Those pseudo crystals, they can be sanitized. They also have certain forms that are found in nature. They have irregular number of faces in their molecular structure. So what happens with those crystals, they can either reflect light like everything does, but they can also refract it depending on how they are oriented. So they can basically create the invisibility or cloaking technology. That's one thing, but there's other things that crystals have been not only brought from elsewhere, but implanted on Earth, as on many other planets, because they are used to program first energy fields, vortices, and in ley lines and places of power like that. But also they were used in temples and pyramids, and many of which have completely vanished before humanity were even born.
Question. There's a place that I know of that there are crystals at the base of each tree. And to me, it would be like a grid. But there are trees in this area, and there's also a quartz mine. But the significance of that, as you're mentioning, programming a grid, is that a location or a storage?
Can be both. If you, I use crystal. I'm one among so many people who use crystals as well to do some healing work, like special, like if I go to a sacred site or a mountaintop or an ancient place, or I don't just go as a tourist, you know, out of curiosity, I go usually to do some spiritual work, normally at least honor the place, honor the spirits of the place, those who walked there before us, and enhance, if possible, its healing property, and which can be done by tuning in with the energy lines, or it can be used. Crystals are a very good tool. They are not the only one you can use, just about anything. A medicine wheel, for instance, you make a circle of stones that creates consecrates a place, creates its own wheel, its own vortex. If you to give power to those gestures and to those tools, I call that consciousness technology. Because if you just like throw a crystal somewhere, it's like that's what it is. But if you like put some intention in it and program it with like loving, healing, peaceful energies, consciousness, maybe to create a bridge with this between heaven and earth, maybe to connect with other sacred sites along the ley lines, and all this. Then your crystal becomes like an antenna. It becomes like a emitter transmitter. And Sasquatch and Star people have been using these tools forever. When they come on new planets and to create some say grid. I don't like the term grid because it sounds like too square.
Mm-hmm.
The Earth is not square. I call it a network. Yeah. Of what we call ley lines, dragon lines, rainbow serpent lines. They're not straight lines. They are usually curves. They can draw geometric forms and patterns and things, but they're usually first by just following the curvature of the earth, they are curved. But also on the long run, they tend to create more some kind of Mandela pattern, like the flower of life, for instance, more than a square grid. The square grid is a corruption of that concept.
When you wrote the book, The Sasquatch Message to Humanity, and I'm recommending people read it because you're not going to be able to condense it here in two sentences. The purpose, what was the general message?
It was a process. You know, it started after I had my first close communication, because I had, that was in 2015, in May actually, around this date, 7 years ago, when I had, I had discovered that I'm part Sasquatch by my Cree ancestry. And that summer, and then I started being very curious and very wanting to meet them, to connect, to learn about them, started studying, and they started coming. You know, I said they, maybe it's one, maybe it's two, maybe it's 10. It doesn't matter really. It's their energy coming, showing up, walking around my camp, walking on my roof, looking at me through the window, and on and on and on. And then I moved to an island, and it kept happening, and I said, well, that doesn't make sense, you know. This I didn't understand yet. The interdimensional abilities they have. I would hear footsteps and not see anyone, and I say, well, I do hear the footsteps, you know, but I don't see them because I didn't know them. They could come in an invisible form. It's much less frightening for us at the beginning. Also, they often come. They start often to communicate through dreams and telepathy. Very often at night, I would feel someone sit on my bed or things like that that I could not quite understand at first. But the more it went, the more it kept happening, the more I felt, I mean, it feels like Sasquatch. It sounds like them, it looks like them, and it might be them. And so I was that spring 7 years ago, I went on that vision quest on Vancouver Island, where I say I'm going in the woods, and I'm going because I had a very clear sighting on Vancouver Island with another friend in 2003 after doing ceremonies with Native elders there. So I say I'm going to the woods, and I'm gonna stay until, you know, I find out about Sasquatch. And the first day, I found my first footprints. It was a good start. So I spent another week walking around, checking out. Nothing really happened until I decided to do a ceremony and just, you know, take out my drum and my flute and smudge and chant and honor the spirit of the place and give thanks and everything. And that's when, that's the same night that I was contacted. And when my guide, Sasquatch guide, came and sat, well, I told that story in detail, so I'll skip, but he came and sat next to my tent, and we started speaking in telepathy. To me, it was already very natural because I've been an animal communicator, and I had plenty of animal contacts in my life that make you learn naturally telepathy. You understand that if you send a good thought to the animal, he gets it, and if you send a bad thought, he gets it too. And so having had this background, to me, when I heard something big come and sit behind my tent, I knew I was not going to talk in French or English or anything. It was in thought. It was telepathy. And I sent my thought, and right back, boom, clear answer came, and then we started a conversation. And it was so dense, so compact, all the info. That's why we call that an info download, because he kind of, once the door is open, it's like pretty much like once your computer is on, you can stick a new disk in it with a bunch of information that will take you a certain time, if not a lot, for your brain to decode and analyze in linear time. So the next morning, I was still under shock. I was still unsure about, you know, who are they? And I felt no threat. But I was shaken, and I was, you know, you hear all this kind of bad story about Sasquatch, so you're not sure so much until you communicate with them, I would say. Because many people have sightings and they're still afraid. But when you start communicating with them, with their I'm tempted to say superior intelligence, you realize that, oh, hey, we got so much to learn. Let's start right now, you know. So that's when the message, the Sasquatch message to humanity started coming out, because it took me over a month after that. First, I had needed confirmations. So in the following days, they came back. We called back and forth. I heard footsteps. I heard a whirlwind around me and a whisper in my ear and all these kind of confirmation to say, you're not crazy. It's happening. We're here. And we'd like you to share what we're teaching you. And 1 week later, I ended up at the International Indigenous Leadership Gathering in Lillooet, BC, where I had been invited by a chief, and got there early and sat with the chiefs and elders there and started shyly, you know, mention about Sasquatch or ask a question, you know, anything about Sasquatch. And then when I started saying, well, I had an encounter, they were all like, oh, yeah, oh, wow, what did they tell you? And then elders would come and sit with me and ask me questions about Sasquatch. And I'm like, wow, well, I'm not so crazy after all, because those people have a lot of knowledge and they know about those things, those beings. To make the story short, because it's a long story. Well, I went up north in BC. I had another encounter with another member of the Sasquatch family, face to face, and started realizing that, wow, they're out there, there are many, and once you know them, they know you. And it's pretty much up to you if you want to continue this communication or not. And then I noticed that just about everywhere I was moving to or going, as long as there's, you know, enough trees around there, pretty much, I would have some signs, I would hear calls from the mountain, I would find structures, whatever, started discovering with them that it's an ongoing journey if you wish so. So they asked me, they say, well, start writing this. And a lot of this information, as you have read, is channeled information about the past of humanity, about the universe, about interdimensionality, about kind of topics that are... Anyway, when I wrote those books, I started with little. I mean, the information was directly sent to me because there are very little sources to back any of that. I have found many since, though. It started as a series of posts on Facebook because I had already a group and an audience there, and I was testing the ground because I thought everybody would think I'm crazy, and I lost it, and some did, and I lost friends over that. But others, there was a very positive reaction saying, wow, this is great information. You should make a book with that and everything. So after that, the seventh chapter was published online. I was actually a second offer to publish, and so I finished the book. As I said, it was pretty much automatic writing. I admit I've been called out, I can say, a couple of times for a couple of discrepancies and might be a little contradiction, a couple seemingly contradictive statements in the book. There's also, of course, a good amount of typos because I was writing that as a, you know, without rereading, completely like automatic writing, beginning to end. So, of course, if I was to read it, there might be a few corrections to do, but however, the message has reached out and it's been read by thousands of people around the world by now. I can say starting with book two, because the first book was published just before our first Sasquatch conference, we called back then, Spiritual Sasquatch, turned into a retreat, and there's been like seven so far. I went to the four first. Book one just came out before the first conference, and where I did opening ceremony, and I was keynote speaker. While at that first conference, they started telling me, well, look, you know, how far it's reaching within a few months, how it's turning into like pretty much, I dare say, a disclosure movement, not the only one, but one. So they say, well, maybe it's time to write another one because there was a demand. And I wrote the second one, for which I can say I took more time to reread. I was, you know, I sat months working on that. The text is probably a little better quality than the first book, except it covers other topics. And so it's pretty much how the series came out. And just to pretty much conclude on this topic, after the two first book were out, coinciding with our first two conference, there was a demand for a third one, and my guys had told me that's pretty much it for you. You know, we've said the essential of what we had to say. But then people wanted another book, and so Kelly decided to start one. After she wrote the first chapter, she came to me. She said, "Oof," she said, "I'm not gonna be able to do that alone. It's much more work than I expected." So I said, well, why don't we just write it as a collective? So we picked up 10 people that channeled Sasquatch that contributed some chapters to that third book. series.
Sunbow True Brother. You can check out his other books and his author's page on Amazon. The one I have that I'm referring to during this interview is The Sasquatch Message to Humanity, Conversations with Elder Camus. Wendy's Coffee House. This is Wendy's Coffee House. I'm Wendy, and my guest, Sunbow True Brother. Website, scenicsasquatch.com.
There were talks about a fourth book, but ever since we have concluded from the guy that I received it, that series is complete. And that's why after they asked me to write an encyclopedia to bring it to a wider audience with more technical information, more documented facts from hundreds of sources to show a different perspective, not just one guy's experience, but everything that's been said or written about Sasquatch since 5,000 years, and sorting out what's true from what's wrong, sometimes willingly misleading, the cover-up, the covert hunts that have been sponsored by several states or secret agencies to catch those beings that are very little addressed or spoken of in the so-called Bigfoot world. And if you become an experiencer and start working with Sasquatch on a regular basis, it almost become a duty. In a way, for me, that's what it became, to share what you really learn from them, because there's so much disinformation and myths and rumors and lies that are going around. All the monster hunters and the people who have no understanding, the hype theories and all that, and that stand sadly in this outer marginal Bigfoot world as, you know, experts and eminent knowledgeable guys that very often never had an experience, or if they had one, they saw Sasquatch cross the road and freaked out, you know. People who have direct experience, and most of them don't even want to talk about it because the public is not ready to hear it, but they're the best source of information, and that includes indigenous cultures around the world who have had generations of interactions.
So basically, for anyone who wants to find out more, one place to go is your website, scenicsasquatch.com. I can't say it fast or it train wrecks. Anyway, the cool thing is that you have open submission opportunities there. So if someone has had an experience, they can submit a story. And there's just so much to work with. Have you noticed an uptick in people who are coming to that site?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's been over 300 people so far who have, in 4 years, who have shared their first-hand experiences, different types, but there's, you know, a common point in various accounts, including with star beings also. There's a lot of stories I cannot publish, I am asked not to publish. Like just a couple nights ago, I did a consultation with an abductee. You know, there are things that some people want to keep private, and so I assist the best I can with my advice and resources, and this is all voluntary services, and I never ask for, I put a price tag on my spiritual work. I trust people's sense of value, which is not always in my advantage, but anyway, it's not for myself that I do this kind of work. I don't get much out of it. It's a service, it's part of my dharma, I would say that is my spiritual duty in this lifetime, that to help with the tools and knowledge I have, make them available as much as I can. On my website, we reached, last month, we reached 5,000 views in one day, between a couple of times over 4,000. And that's in over 160 countries. So
there's a lot of interest.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest, and I've noticed also in the last 6-7 years, a huge, definitely remarkable evolution in the general mentality, let's say, especially among the Bigfoot or Sasquatch enthusiasts. There are, like, 5-6 years ago, we would be called woo, well, that still happens, but we would be, you know, considered as crazies and all kind of names I don't even want to repeat for trying to share our experience, right? With
right.
people who are supposedly seeking to learn. But what happened, and I've noticed increasingly strongly because I keep researching regularly, and I've had several, I could say big names, experts in the field, so-called experts, that have contacted me. For instance, the founder of hominology, Dr. Dmitry Baryonov. I can take his example. He's just passed a couple summers ago. I can take his example to illustrate the whole process I'm speaking of. The first, he read the Sasquatch to human, he heard of, he probably read a couple of chapters on Light before it was published. He wrote to me a few times. He's a founder of hominology, of the Institute of Hominology of Moscow. He coined the term hominology, and he had over 70 years in the field. You know, because in Russia, they've taken the subject of the hairy humanoids much more seriously than in America. Anyway, officially. They do in America, but they cover it up. You know, it's like a joke. So, not in Russia. So, Dr. Baryonov wrote to me and started with a very scientific, you know, skeptic approach, like, what's your background? Do you have any proof of your story? How can we trust what you say? This kind of questionnaire, form filing approach that, you know, I was, so I tried to explain very honestly and everything, and he kept, you know, like denying, like that's impossible. He's been 70 years in the field, never heard anything like that. So, okay. Well, I said, you know, I'm not a guinea pig or a lab rat, and or the subject of any studies. I just share my experience with whoever is interested. And I don't have anything to prove because it's never going to be possible. With all the evidence of the world, it's never going to be able to prove something that science is not ready to accept.
Right.
So, Dr. Baryonov, that went like that for a while, but just in his last year or so, like a couple of years ago, 2-3 years, I'm not sure, he finally had a copy of my book and read it, my first two, I think. Read my books, and then he wrote back and he said, wow, he said, that's historical revelation. We've never reached this level of communication with these beings so far. And can you ask them for me a couple of questions, right? We talk about the head of the hominology department, Institute of Moscow. So I was all like, wow, you know, that's just one example. I could name several others that, like, mainstream Bigfooters, I can say, that started to explore or make films or documentary called The Paranormal Bigfoot, The Supernatural Sasquatch, Sasquatch and UFO, Bigfoot and Aliens. And you start seeing that more and more everywhere now.
Yeah.
It's becoming almost the mainstream of, or at least it's outclassing the ape hunter theories and monster hunters.
Okay.
In many, many, many fields.
One question. You said he had two questions. Can you give me one question he wanted you to ask Sasquatch?
I think they were pretty much personal questions.
That's my problem. Yeah. I thought, oh, I bet that can't. Okay, that's all right. You can't divulge.
What I can say about that is that because when he sent me this And I said, I published it on my website, and my bad, maybe, because he has, anyway, Kelly to keep it private, but it was addressed to me as well. And to me, it was such a wonderful revelation that I said, well, I mean, that cannot remain secret, because I won't publish something about like someone's private life or something like that, but some ideas, you know, some thoughts from an eminent researcher that's worth sharing. So I did, because I did. All right. He was booked in a huge Bigfoot convention, Sasquatch convention in BC. Christopher Murphy, one of the top, supposedly, a bestseller, anyway, best-selling Bigfoot author. And when that guy saw Dr. Bayanov's letter I had published, he wrote to him and canceled his booking for an international conference, pretexting that he had lost 7 years of credibility over a paranormal fling. I'm quoting.
Wow.
So that gives the overall situation of those guys who pause as experts, who have never had any experience themselves, who discredit all the real experiencers' knowledge because it's above their head or they don't want to believe someone.
Right.
Out of the blue can have a better encounter than they've never had.
It's like what happened with John Mack, Dr. Mack, when he was investigating, pursuing, looking into, researching, all that stuff you do to try to find out if something's legit. And just for doing that and having that interest, they were trying to discredit him. And that sounds par for the course.
So that gives one example of how people should not look at the most famous so-called experts. You should look at experiencers, and experiencers won't come out to flash in the mainstream news or anything, on TV shows or anything like that. The real experiencers, they don't want to talk about it most often because people won't listen. They will share it if you're respectful and open. And it's the same in Native circles. I've been in Native circles for over 40 years doing ceremonies with many others, dozens of Native nations, and until 7 years ago, when I started working with meeting the Sasquatch and bringing it in the medicine circles, that's when I noticed, oh, well, they all know about those things. How come they never mention it? Because they don't know who to trust. They don't know if you're going to laugh at them. And I had several examples where I first asked, oh, do you have Sasquatch stories? Even in Chehalis, which is pretty much the Sasquatch capital of the world, a couple different people, a man and a woman, that two different days, and I ask, and their first reaction is, oh, yeah, we have plenty of stories, but we don't talk about it. And the next thing is like, well, I start sharing, oh, I have encounters, and I like this, I work with the Sasquatch, and my spirit guides, and everything. Oh! Then they start telling you, I had my encounter just at this corner right here, and the woman go gets her phone and shows me, oh, these are footprints we saw last week. My uncle is a shaman. He feeds them.
Mm.
At the other medicine elder in the sweat lodge start telling that his uncle saw a spaceship land when he was a kid. He's in his 80s, 90s now. When he was a kid, his uncle saw a spaceship land and tall white beings carrying a Sasquatch, and his uncle went to heal, to cure the Sasquatch with herbs and medicine, and it became their spirit guide. That's the kind of stories you hear when you talk in confidence with the medicine people, you know. But they won't come out to speak on YouTube or, you know, few will, very few.
You give us a lot to think about. I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing, because you've given a ton of information on your website by sharing the experiencer stories as well, and then your information with your books. And I wanted to source the Sasquatch message to humanity, because there's a lot of information in there. So thank you. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Sunbow True Brother. Seeing is believing. Most people, when they have an experience with Sasquatch, are more likely to have a sensation of presence or hearing something or feeling, even smelling. But the seeing part isn't always front and center. And sometimes when you have a camera and you try to capture that moment, you're either too discombobulated and sometimes, you know, scared stiff, or it doesn't show. The image isn't there and you know you saw something. And then you're accused of, well, you know, this is the typical shaky photo, shaky camera syndrome. It isn't that. It's that our electronics don't always function during these circumstances. Our technology doesn't always pick up the nuances. And having been in that situation where sometimes you're seeing something that is so outside your realm of reality that all you're doing is standing there staring, and then you realize, I could have taken a picture at the moment that you can't take a picture anymore. So that's also the issue, and it's very hard to express that sometimes the camera is not the first thing you think of. And even when you do think of it, there may be a downtime where it's impossible to get a camera. It's impossible to take the picture. And when you take the picture, it doesn't show up. The mystery and the wonder of dealing with paranormal anomalies. Sunbow True Brother, the website, scenicsasquatch.com.